Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the WMRG radio station here. This is your outlaw country music radio station, Countdown to Green. That's right. A little later on in the show, it'll be Countdown to Green for this weekend's racing, all your dirt track racing action right here at the Southeastern Motorsports Radio Network. I'm your host, the G-Man, right here at WMRG Outlaw Country Music Radio. What do you say we start things off and kick this show and get a little C-O-U-N-T-R-Y rolling your way? Hang on, everybody. Don't go anywhere. This show tonight is underlined from the good folks at the U.S. Bonding Company. That's right, folks. I'm going to tell you right now, if you change... Right, race fans, you don't want to change that radio station. Stay tuned. Keep it right here. WMRG radio station, the good folks at U.S. Bonding, you may need their service. That's right, race fans. They say if they nail you, they can bail you. And that's what's going to happen if you tune this out and turn this radio station 95.3 on your FM dial right here at WMRG radio. Don't turn that dial. Finding the official underlying associates right here with WMRG and the Southeastern Motorsports Radio Network. What do you say we kick this thing out with a little C-O-U-N-T-R-Y?
O-U-N-T-R-Y. O-U-N-T-R-Y.
Oh, yeah, a little C-O-U-N-T-R-Y. They call it Low Cash Cowboys and Country Music. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to WMRG, the home for your outlaw country music radio station this Thursday night here, 9:36 here in the Carolinas. Beautiful night outside, a little bit rainy, but you know what? Mother Nature is blessing us with all that beautiful water from heaven up there. Come down, do you right? Let's see, right now it's 87 degrees here in the Carolinas under some rainy skies, but you know what? That ain't going to stop us from broadcasting. That ain't going to stop us from bringing you what you want to know tonight. Now, some of the best in outlaw country music here at the WMRG studios. And a little later on tonight in the second half of the show, don't forget, it's the race commentary show with the G-Man, bringing you some of the updates for this weekend here at some of your local racetracks and also around the globe. We're going to take a look at the race monitor here and see what's going on in the world of outlaws around the country. That's what we're going to do. But folks, before we get started here, before we get ready to kick some tires and light some fires again here at the WMRG studios, remember, the show is underlined tonight from the good folks in the U.S. Bonding. Folks, you never know when you may need the services of a bondsman. 1979, these folks have helping people put their feet back on the street. That's right, folks. Good people, bad things can happen to good people, and if you need that service, U.S. Bonding Company, Jim Camp and all the associates over there out of the greater Charlotte, North Carolina area, and also out of the Union County, Monroe area. Folks, these people know their stuff. I guarantee if you need some assistance, some legal help, warrant issues, some bond issues, maybe some representation about some legal issues. Like I say, good things, you know, come to good people. And you never know, folks. So give them a call. The good folks at U.S. Bonding. But while we're sitting back here, kicking back, doing what we do best, and that's bringing some of the best in outlaw country music, we're going to do just that. We're going to bring you a couple of tracks right here. So sit back, take a sip on the old jar, sit back, put your feet up, kick them cowboy boots off, tip your hat back, because it's time to get down with a little bit of outlaw country music. We'll be right back, folks.
Yes, sir, we will be right back. Right now, folks, we're going to take and kick this thing up here at the bottom of the hour right here at 7:25 in the Carolinas. This is the G-Man here at WMRG, 95.3 on the FM side of the dial. We got a great show lined up for you tonight here. We're going to take a little bit of time and got Bill Blair back in the studio again here, folks. And when we come back here, we're going to talk a little bit about some up and coming, some good things coming up here. We did mention to you on the last show that we done that we've got a special event that's going to be taking place here. And I wanted to clarify a couple of things here. It will be a film presentation, broke up into multiple segments here. But under the basic guidelines here with WMRG and the licensing here, there are certain entities that we cannot mention here, being the fact that we're a nonprofit organization here. We work on donations and contributions here. We do not fall under the 501c category as a charity nonprofit. We are a nonprofit organization here based on research, education, and the development and the studies of. So at this time, I hope with the explanation on the disclaimers here, 7:27 in the Carolinas, a beautiful night outside tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get right back up here and join the roundtable session here. Coming to the table here tonight is our good friend here and our co-host with the show here at WMRG, Bill Blair. Bill, what's happening up there in the beautiful city of Thomaston, North Carolina? Or Thomasville, I'm sorry.
Yeah, been mowing all day.
You've been bowling or mowing?
Mowing.
Oh, okay. I thought you said you were bowling.
With a tractor.
I hear you. Well, you've been doing that for about the last 4 days up there. What you got, you a hay field or a wheat field?
No, about 5-6 acres, I guess, and it's rained so much up here. You can watch it grow. It'll be ready to mow again by this weekend, probably.
I hear
anyway,
you. That's
something we got to do.
That's all right. Hey, Bill. Last time on the last show, we talked about some up and coming things here. But what I want to do is I want to bring something up here and kind of give the fans that have been listening here to the show an update here. We had mentioned several shows back about the monuments and some things going on, the preservation down there with the Historical Society on your end. And How about giving us a recap and an update, Bill, where we stand right now? I know you got some great news, and I'm going to let you tell all the great fans what's happening and where we stand right now with the historical and the preservation deal down that way.
Well, there's a lot of good things happening right now. It seems like it's all at one time, but we've got the money raised and have ordered the two historical markers for the High Point Speedway built in 1940 and also here in High Point, the Tri-City Speedway built in 1947 by my father and his brother. And at the time, these two tracks were built, of course. They were outside the city of High Point, and it's been annexed over the years, and there's housing developments on both pieces of property. And I went to the city of High Point and spent some time telling them what we need to do, and they agreed, and it did take some time to get everybody on board and raise the money, but we've got it now, and the markers have been ordered. Very shortly, we'll be having an exhibit, racing exhibit, here at the High Point Museum, and it'll be a room devoted to nothing but stock car racing in the early days, and if you want to come by and see what it used to look like and the drivers and the tracks are right next to one another. You could take a big dirt clod and throw it from one track over to the other, just a row of trees that separated them. But anyway, High Point being one of the towns that only had about 5,000 people at that time, but then they had two racetracks, which is a little bit unique. And at that period of time, too, High Point had more race car drivers than any other city in the country. I think there was a total of 8 drivers, good drivers, out of this area that raced all over the country. So that's one of the things going on. And then, you know, been working for about a year, a little more, talking to some of the boys that used to work over at Holman and Moody, and some of them still do, and we wanted to get together and talk about what it used to be like racing in the 50s and 60s and 70s and up until the 80s. And these guys actually work there, and they've got a lot of stories that they have to tell, and it's history. And it will be very interesting, I guarantee you. I don't know if they've been done or not with the Holman and Moody group, but there's a lot of differences of opinions and a lot of different stories. But anyway, I know these guys very well, and I think they'll tell it like it was. And I wouldn't, if I was interested in stock car racing, I wouldn't want to miss it for anything in the world. And we'll go through our normal channels like we used to. Todd Morris will be filming it, edit it, and we'll present it as we have before with Rex White and some of the guys like Jack Tant and David Soulsby and others we made available for just historical purposes.
Now, is this something here, and I know some people were asking when they saw some postings earlier in the week here now, and I kind of answered them in a positive way that, yes, this is somewhat of a, it may not be directed, you know, directly involved with, but I kind of answered their questions, Bill, in the sense that this may be a multiple part segment deal over the course of the, you know, time, because there's just no way that we can, you know, of course, get everything in one day and shoot and film everything. So, yes, over the course of time, it'll be multiple segments here. But what somebody had wrote in here the other day when I was talking to them here, and they wrote in a question, they wanted to know if this was going to be in conjunction with the presentation, I believe you said, that's going on in September here. And I didn't know how to answer them. I know we've got a – go ahead.
Well, G-Man, the deal is these guys have got so much history and so much they could tell, we could spend 3 or 4 days just sitting there talking to them and filming it. And we got to do this in a day's time, and we're going to start probably about 10 o'clock, and I don't know when we'll end up. We'll break for lunch. But, of course, Todd, he's good at editing. He understands stock car racing. But we're just going to be informal and talk freely and interrupt one another and kick back and talk racing the way it used to be with the place that they work over at Holman and Moody. And, you know, if you stop thinking about it, you had Chevrolet, Kecaver, Ford, Chrysler. I mean, all of them had a similar situation as Holman and Moody, but Holman and Moody was so instrumental in stock car racing that period of time. So many people worked there. I think at one time they probably had close to 400 people working, and they did so much for stock car racing. This is what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
And the individuals involved, and there's just so much history there. You know, the guys work there. They know what took place. They know what happened, and they have a lot of stories, and they like to get together and just talk about it and reminisce what they used to do and tell jokes. What, you know, they were pranksters, too, and no doubt they'll be telling some tales about the jokes they pulled on one another. And they'll get serious, too, and talk about individuals and the cars and the engines and who was involved. And, you know, there's not a lot of people even know that Homer Moody was involved in road racing. But
yep.
They were heavily involved in a lot of different projects. And this is stuff they're just going to kick around and talk about. And I think it'd be very enjoyable. And I have some questions, you know, that I want to ask some of them at work there. And I think basically the guys that will be here, six or seven of them, they'll cover the whole period of time. And it was really interesting how they got into racing and how Ford Motor Company went about it, which that's Henry Ford II. And but it's going, we're going to cover it. And after we get edited, I think people love to sit back and watch it. And we'll just use it for historical purposes. You know, it may be that some museum or somebody doing research would like to view it sometime or another. And it'll be the actual facts. It'll be no BS. It'll be the real deal.
Well, that's, you know, there's a lot of the filming that you had done in the earlier days there with some of the greats there, you know, Jack Tant and Randy Myers and Rex White and them. And, you know, we had done some rebroadcasting and replaying on some of those there. And I know we got some interesting and some definitely some great people coming to the filming here starting on the 13th here. But there was a question that I had here, and I don't want to get too deep into it, but the years of the 50s, Bill, 54, 5, or 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, up through that time there, that seemed to be the, I guess we could say, the high points of a lot of these gentlemen here. But is it true, and I just want to kind of get a yes or a no without a lot of detail, at one point, was it back around 1956 there, Bill, where Home and Moody actually had to pull out away from NASCAR for a short period of time and then come back after about a year's leave of absence? Was that a true story?
No, it was, I think, sometime in June of 1957.
Okay.
That's when they pulled out. And
okay.
It was a short period of time.
Okay. Okay. It was due to another engine manufacturer. Is that correct?
No. I think it was our government putting a stop to it. They wanted to break some of them up into more divisions. They didn't want to have a monopoly on the automobile manufacturing. And they were looking at the position that they were in, you know, number three in sales, and you spend a lot of money, you're still number three in sales. Is it really worth it? But 57, you know, is when the insurance companies was getting after them, too, building high-performance cars and stuff. And I guess the government was more instrumental in anything. That's what we're going to find out for sure.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, there'll be some people that can tell us the 13th just exactly what happened. But see, Chevrolet pulled out, too. They had an agreement. And I feel sure that we'll be talking about the under-the-table deals, too.
Okay. Because there was the reason why I brought that up, Bill, I was researching some things the other day, and I come across an interesting point, and I didn't know how to interpret it, whether it was a misrepresentation, but something about the Valpolo Chrysler deal with an engine deal.
Well, Pete DiPaolo, O.N. and
yes.
Guy, see, Ford put him in the racing business. They didn't want to appear to be in the racing business, so he was the front man. He's the guy that started hiring people.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he's the guy that started hiring the people. And then later on, you know, to really get the job done, it later on became Homer and Moody.
Okay, okay.
And Pete DiPaolo got out of it. I mean, you know, that what they undertook was big, and it's more than one man can do. And you had to have a racing background, big race drop down. This was where racing was at, you know, that type of racing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's why I say, I mean, there's just a lot of interesting facts here, Bill, that, like I say, we'll sit down and, as they say, you know, clean the laundry or air the laundry, you know, with some of these episodes here. But I just reading some of the things here. And, you know, Bill, you can look at the internet, you can read things, but you don't know the veracity. When you see things that are posted on the internet or posted by people, you know, there's just no real claim laid to anything. Like I say, the veracity of the truth behind it can only be told by the people actually involved. Am I correct?
Well, that's the way I'd want to do it.
I mean,
well, I've always found it. I mean, there's been a lot of racing books written, and I can name them on one hand that's worth reading. There's probably 24 that's not worth reading. It's a waste of time. And you can tell very quickly, if you know anything about early stock car racing, that they've talked to somebody or they've read other books. And nowadays, who are you going to talk to that was there?
There's very
few and far between. I was talking to Rex White, I believe, a couple of days ago, and their Chevrolet program in 56 and 7, there's only 4 guys still living that was involved in it. And Rex is one of them, and Dennis Bradley, and, you know, the most of these guys are gone. And, you know, both John Holman and Ralph Moody's gone, so the son is still living. But the guys that we'll be talking to, you know, they pretty much were there, and not in 1955 and 56, though, except one of them. And his daddy is one of the first employees of Holman Moody.
Yes.
So we're very fortunate to be able to have him. But we try to cover it as best we can and as honest as we can and get the straight scoop. And it'll be some really stories that's probably not been heard before and opinions. I feel sure they'll have opinion as to what happened and what should have happened. And perhaps it could have been another name besides Holman and Moody. You know, that's going to be a surprise to a lot of people.
Well, see, that's what I say, Bill. It's the history behind some of these legends here. You know, I sat down with somebody the other day, and we were drinking some coffee and talking about stock car racing in the early days, because his dad was like my dad and like your dad, you know, back in the early days of stock car racing when it was fun, when it was entertaining, when it was family fun, when it was affordable, and it wasn't a big commercial and corporate venture. You know, you could build a race car in your backyard. Most guys would pitch up a tarp and throw a race car together under the tarp and, you know, load up on a trailer and travel all around up to the north, down to the south, and, you know, wherever local races were being held. And, you know, we sat there. You know, this fellow that I talk with here, he's like you, Bill. He's a historian about a lot of things, and he has a lot of reality about his stories and things. But he made a comment to me, Bill, and his name is Al. And like I say, his comment was, Greg, you know, we could sit here and we could talk for days on end and days and days and days. He says, but I don't think that there is enough days to really reminisce or to bring back the reality of what it was like for the people to get the whole entire story. He said, but if you could take and just bring back the highlights and bring back little pieces, the heartwarming stories, the ups, the downs, the pros, the cons, you know, back in the days when racing was, as we say, a family sport. He says, I think that you'll accomplish a lot in the preservation of motorsports, because the comment, and I don't want to get into it, but he made some comments about the way racing is today on the big circuits, and I don't want to use their title because I don't want to seem like I'm bashing anybody or any circuit or division. But his comment was he lost interest years ago, and not in stock car racing, but he lost interest in the way that it was being represented and portrayed today because of all these so-called rules, the changes, the way things are being done now, penalties, fines. I mean, it's taken away from one thing, the race fan themselves, and the other thing it's taken away from is the value, the family value, and the traditional value of the sport. Do you kind of see where I'm coming from on this, Bill?
Well, I do, and I can tell you more in depth with time why it happened the way it did. And very briefly, when we grew up and my daddy grew up, the automobile hadn't been on the scene too long. The only people who had automobiles were very, very wealthy people until Henry Ford put them on the assembly line in 1932, and they become very cheap. So, you know, the family, average family then could get an automobile, and they were gearheads. You know, farming was big back in that time, and you had equipment to take care of, so you knew something about, you know, taking care of something, and the car came with the tools in the trunk to work on them, and it's just so much difference. If your daddy was a Ford guy, you was probably going to be a Ford guy, and you didn't have to come up through the ranks to go drive a race car. You show up with an entry fee and you can go drive it, whether you've ever been behind the wheel or not. It's just so much different, and it was more of a family sport back in those days, and you could reach out and actually touch these guys, and today you can't. They're well protected and they stay on their motor coaches, and it's all about money now. And see, back in those days, there wasn't no money in racing. I mean, they paid a little bit of a purse, but the guys did it because they loved it and they had a passion for that sport. It was a big challenge to them. And now it's a little bit different. I mean, a little bit, heck, it's a whole lot different. But, you know, times have changed. We all have our highs at one point in time in a sport. I think this sport of stock car racing is headed downhill. People have lost interest in it. You can't relate to the cars. You know, the established drivers are retiring right and left, and they only have, you know, just stop and think about how many guys besides Harvick, Matt Kenseth, and just a few more is the only one that's been running for a while. The rest of them's going to be all rookies before long. So you can't relate to them. With Little Lead leaving, and Jeff Gordon's already gone. A lot of fan power there that's not going to be watching any longer here in another year. But it's what it is. Ain't nothing we can do about it. You can click the tube on and off. If you get in the car to go, it's going to cost you some bucks to go to race anymore. I've got some posters where it used to cost 50 cents, then a dollar, then a dollar and a half, and the first place probably paid $250, $300. I mean, you know, the deal's different. But a race car didn't cost much then either.
Right.
But it's just, you know, a guy could probably sit down and spend some time and write a book on the evolution of a race car, starting about 1939, 1940. That'd be a good place to start. And then the war come along, everything stopped. Then they got going again, 46. But just what happened, the individuals, Detroit, Kickacher, and there's so many things that took place back in those days that changed and was part of the evolution of a stock car. And then, you know, look what we got today. The shop is full of engineers now. There's no more mechanics. We used to call them mechanics. Now they're engineers, specialists. And there's no engine builders left anymore. Everything is designed with a CN machine, computer, a program. And, you know, they punch it in, you know, and there's a machine there that makes it. You come along later on, and it comes down the assembly line, and you go towards the engine shop where they assemble it. And you don't have to have in my opinion now, you ain't got to be a real smart dude to put a motor together anymore, because it's all done for you.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you sit here telling me that, and I look every once in a while, I see you doing some update pictures there, you working in the shop, you know, and working on them flathead motors and things. And, you know, you're right. Everything is an engineer game. You know, now, you know, the average race shop, 200-300 employees, and that's not even really counting everybody, because you got your A team, the B team, and things like that. And, you know, you look at a pit box now out there, and it's no longer a pit box. It's a control room. You got 8-9 people sitting up on top of $150,000 pit cart now.
Oh,
you know, I remember back, Yeah, I remember back in the days when Ernie Irvin said, huh?
Well, they got computers up there. If it's 50 laps to go in the race and you're running third and they have a caution, they can punch a button and it'll give you your options and tell you what the best option is. Get two tires or four tires or stay out or what. I mean, they don't have to do nothing no more. I don't want a crew chief, I guess, is a name only. Somebody's got to be in charge. But I went to North Carolina Auto Racing Hall of Fame Museum in Mooresville the other last Friday night, and I had a presentation over there about road racing, and Elliot Ford Robinson and Kenny Thompson and some others were there, and they were talking about the computers, everything computerizes, and one of the guys said, well, you know, they still have to find somebody that's got something between their ears. They can figure this stuff out sometime. The computer ain't always right.
There you go.
I mean, I won't say it's comical, but that's just the way racing is. And spotters, I mean, gosh, those guys, look at a 39-40 Ford. If you look in that rear view mirror, it's just a little bitty thing.
Yep.
And they didn't have side mirrors on them. How they didn't run over one another, I do not know. Today, they wouldn't dare get in one of these race cars without a real, real good spotter. And they still got mirrors all over them, but, I mean, just look. I know what it is to drive without a mirror. You better use that mirror or you will run over somebody.
Well, some of these racetracks, Bill, they've got two and three spotters at them. Talladega and Daytona and the road course. I mean, there you go. Two, three spotters, like I say, at a racetrack. You know, back in the days, like I say, back when I worked in a Busch team, I can remember that's back when it was Busch Grand National. You know, old Ernie Irvin's dad used to build pit carts for us. And he'd build us a nice pit wagon for about $15,000. And, you know, you had one guy, you had a car chief, if you want to call him that, and, you know, a fuel man, a couple of guys running tires and a jack man. And, you know, we traveled with six or seven guys when we did the Busch Grand National circuit. Now they're traveling with 35, 40, 50 people. You know, it's amazing what, but, you know.
Well, I've been there and done that, Greg. Also, I've been there way back when the driver and one guy, and when I worked for Jim Pascoe, it was Jim and me working part-time. I was still going to high school, and Frank Hayworth was full-time. And we run 50-some races and had one car. Now, if you think that ain't a cluster, I'm going to tell you, but we didn't know no better. I mean,
you made it work, though, Bill. You made one car work for 50, 60 races because everybody had heart into it, man. You had eight, six, or seven guys that had heart. They loved what they did, Bill. They didn't care about the overhead. They didn't care about the commercial end of it. They didn't have to worry about showing up at work and finding out they ain't got a sponsor and they didn't have a job. They had something that they loved, and it was a passion for the sport of racing. You know what I mean?
I've used that word over and over, passion. They loved to do it. I never heard nobody complain about the hard work and early stock car racing. The only reason anybody ever quit stock car racing back in the 50s and 60s, probably 70s too, was because they ran out of money and couldn't afford to do it no more. That's the only reason they would quit. And, I mean, my daddy would race for nothing. He went to Phoenix, Arizona, when there was no interstate back in 1950-51 just to go race. I mean, he was looking for something to do, and there's a race out there, and he couldn't miss it. He had to go. I know my mother said he'd do anything to go to a race.
Yeah, and I, you know, sitting here, we were talking about pit passes or grandstand. I still got a ticket stub here from back many years ago where it was 75 cents to get into a race. And, you know, 75 cents was, you could go there with a $10 bill and pay 75 cents to get in and get you all kind of good racing. You can get your food and you go home with some change in your pocket, you know, and didn't have to worry about it. But I wanted to throw something out here, Bill. And I'm not trying to bash anything, but you remember years ago, track like Richmond International Speedway used to be a lottery. You used to have to put in to get your tickets for a Richmond like a year in advance. And it was such a depressing event this past week for Richmond here. 18,023 people for the Richmond race. A place that holds 100,000 plus. They had 18,000 people, Bill. 18,000.
Well,
sad, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for it. I really don't. I hate it for them. The next thing that's going to happen, the sponsorship money's going to dry up because who's going to want to pay what it costs to run a race car anymore and not get much of a bang for the buck, you know, if there's nobody going to be watching it. Now, I think their TV ratings are way down, too.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Fox.
Yeah, and I believe that Monster got a real good deal. Monster Energy got the NASCAR deal real cheap compared to what the others had to pay.
Yeah. Well, Sprint, I saw some stats. Sprint actually, in the several years that Sprint had the deal, their sales had dropped 9.2% in the last 2 years that Sprint had the deal. And the still number one deal was, of course, R.J. Reynolds back in the days when it was Winston Cup. And prior to that, when it was the Grand National Circuit, but R.J. Reynolds still had the best. But the statistics are available out there online. You can look them up and see. But again, Bill, I don't have an answer, just like you don't. But I just wanted to throw that out there to let people. But you know, again, like we talk about, Bowman Gray Stadium this past Saturday night, Bill, was a sellout, 21,000 people for Bowman Gray at the opening night.
Well, I mean, I'm not, if I had anything to do with the management down in Daytona Beach, I'd send somebody up here to Bowman Gray Stadium and study what's going on up here. And I mean, I think I know, but, you know, they don't gouge you up here. And they let the boys be boys. And if you spend, they know there's going to be action, and generally you don't have anybody get hurt over there. But they pretty well, they run a neat program. They start on time, and they finish on time regardless. And
yep.
You can watch anything that goes on over there. Any time during the week, you can look these boys up and stop by and talk to them. Everybody knows where they live. There's people come from everywhere to come into Bowman Gray Stadium. I mean, they come up from Virginia, Tennessee, South Carolina, Georgia. They come up here. I've had people that I know that come up here when they was running Madhouse over there, and they couldn't get a ticket. Couldn't get in.
Congratulations. Burt Myers, congratulations to Tim Brown.
Yeah, when they had that Madhouse over there, they had a deal. It was actually, really good. You had Junior Miller and Tim Brown and the two Myers boys and Fleming. And they'd get out there once in a while, and it was serious. I mean, they'd spend one another out and get out and fuss about it and might threaten one another. And the people come over and just eat that up. And, you know, my understanding is that NASCAR headquarters, powers to be down there, stopped all that. They didn't want that.
Well, they stopped it because they were claiming a poor misrepresentation of how NASCAR actually is and how the portrayal of how NASCAR runs a facility. But one thing that, there's some pros and cons to that, Bill. One thing that they got to remember is I don't care who you are. You can go to Bowman Gray tonight and watch them boys. They have a curfew, 11 o'clock. They can't have a motor running after 11 o'clock. They've got to be done. Okay? They have got to be done and off that facility, lights out. But you know what, Bill? As much fussing and kicking and roughhousing that they have over there, you know, you have 10,000 people booing for Burt Myers and 10,000 people cheering for Burt Myers. You got, you know, every week that place is packed and sold out. What NASCAR, I agree with you, what NASCAR needs to understand is here's a local racetrack, a short, flat as a pancake racetrack that can run a 200-lap NASCAR modified wheel and tour event up there, wheel and modified tour, with some of the best. Junior Miller with 72 victories in his career up there. Chris Fleming, Jason and Burt Myers, and some of the best of the best, Tim Brown and all them up there. You got multiple champions. You got six champions or seven champions that were running in that modified race last weekend up there. And you know what? Again, this Saturday night, they'll pack another 20,000 in there, Bill. They'll do it again. They'll do it week after week after week. I mean, is there a light bulb that needs to be lit somewhere down in Florida or what, buddy?
I don't know. Sheila and I, my wife, we go two or three times a year. One year went Gary Lou Allen and myself went about five, six times. And we go through the pits and talk to them. Very friendly. And the place is accommodating. I mean, they don't gouge on the food, the drinks, the parking. I mean, you park free over there, but, you know, look at your tracks now. They charge you to park. Outrageous. About like going to watch a pro football game, you know. Some of these places, like Dallas Cowboys, and it's $100 more to park in their parking lot. And, you know, some of these, I don't know what Charlotte and Daytona charge, but they charge for everything you do down there. Only thing that's free down in Daytona Beach is the air. If they could find you a way to charge you for that, they'd do it.
And you know, like I say, Bill, we could sit here all night long and do 15, 20 shows in a row about all the negativity that's been going on lately. But, you know, the old saying, they shot themselves in the foot a long time ago here. And you're right. You are 100% right. The sport now, you know, the names out there, the young rookies out there, it's a rookie's world now. All the old timers are gone. All the veterans are gone. You know, the technology has changed.
There's nothing to relate to.
No, nothing. Nothing.
To relate to. And the best track I had to watch a race, and the most fabled track of all of them, the Southern 500 Dalton, they're going to do away with that. Now, have you ever heard such a ridiculous thing in your life?
No,
and
that's like
when they did. When the, you know what happened to, I think that they went after more than the blue collar worker. They wanted the doctors and the lawyers, and they didn't want no ruckus going on. The guys can't spin one another out. You know, they used to put them in the penalty box, like Sterling Marlin up at Martinsville one time for five laps, and Dale Earnhardt for bumping somebody at Charlotte one time. You get on their bumper and take the arrow spoiler and they spin out. And this crazy stuff like that, and that was supposed to entice, if they kept it PC, you know, us enticing doctors, lawyers, and wealthy people to come to the racing. Well, that's great, but when they did that, they upped the prices. I guess they said they went where the money's at, you know, so they upped the prices on everything. Well, what happened to the blue-collar people? They quit coming. The grass.
Exactly.
Race. And now you see the blue-collar people still coming to Bowman Gray Stadium. And I must be blue-collar, too, because I know about half of them. And, you know, another thing over there of interest, if there was a family, let's say the Cliftons, they're related to Tim Brown. If they sit in turn four in section C, they were sitting there in 1950s, and the family's set in the same place today. And you'd be surprised how many families, I mean hundreds of them, probably thousands of them, that have been going for 50, 60 years over the Bowman Gray Stadium, and the family's set in the same spot.
Lauren Pinella's the PR man over there. I talked to him a while back, and we were talking about there is right now, Bill, there is eight generations of Bowman Gray attendance. Eight generations. I'm talking eight generations. I mean, think of the numbers, man. Think of how far back eight generations goes. And like you say, you're probably right, and I guarantee that you're right. There are people sitting in them grandstands right now that their grandfather, their great-grandfather, whatever, sat in them same seats back in the 50s.
Well, if I want to see Ebb Clifton, I know Saturday night exactly where he's going to be, where he's going to be sitting. And many others like it. And it's what it is, but it just so happens that I won't say it is unique, but I guess if you're in the business, you could certainly go over there and learn a little bit of how to promote and put a race on. What else? I'm not going to say no more about it. I'm tired of hearing what people suggesting Brian France ought to do, Lisa France ought to do, because they ain't going to do it. They're going to do it their way.
But what's the key word, Bill, that the big man at Bowman Gray told you a long time ago? Entertainment.
Yeah.
Entertainment. That's what it is. It's entertainment, because you know why? There's the proof is in the pudding. Look in the grandstand. There's nights over at Bowman Gray. If you ain't there by a certain time, you ain't getting in, or you're gonna be standing. You know,
well,
if you ain't there, huh?
That's true. And another thing you can do there, a family could come, and if they got two kids or whatever, they can roam around and visit the other kids, and not your parents don't have to worry because people's looking after them. They got plenty of security, and you see kids roaming together. They're not causing no problem. They're nice kids, but they go and visit one another every Saturday night.
Absolutely.
You can bring whole family and not have to worry about what is your daughter doing or what is your son doing. Because you can see everything goes on, so you can keep your eye on them. But they know each other, and they visit over there, and they hang out together. It's just really a great deal, and the guys run it over there now. You know, they still kin to the Hawkins family, and I guess as long as that happens, it can keep on running. But it's a unique situation. I certainly enjoy going over there. If you want to have a good show, see some racing, see a little action, and it's a convenient place to go. That's the place to go is Bowman Gray Stadium, Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
That's right. Look it up, folks.
Charles,
like I said,
tell us anything for that comment, but he does a good job, doesn't he?
Absolutely, sure does. That's why I say, folks, and I don't want to sit here and dwell on it because a lot of it is just really heartbreaking on some of these other things. But, Bill, I want to touch on one last thing here, and then I want to kind of move on to get ready to do a couple quick things here before we close out this segment of the show here. We talk about the old racetracks. We talk about local Saturday night short track racing. We talk about the memories and everything. And you had posted a picture I believe it was on the old North Wilkesboro Speedway with the weeds growing up on the straightaway there. And, you know, we talked about it on other shows, 800-plus ghost racetracks now. This is what I mean, Bill. This is why the preservation of stock car racing is so important. When you fans and you people look and you see these once historical landmark racetracks like the Darlington Speedway, North Wilkesboro Speedway here, Rockingham Speedway, that are just deserted now, that, Bill, it's I don't know what the word is. I don't want to use the word depressing, but it's a shame.
It is
to see.
Sad.
It is. These were our landmarks, Bill. This is what racing had history about here.
Yeah. Well, the one thing about Okanichi, and it started out being called Okanichi, then it was Orange, and ended up being called Hillsborough Mile Track. It started out being it's an Indian reservation, Okanichi Indians, and it had a horse track there in a half mile. France saw it flying over it one day, and he went back, him and I guess Ed Lawrence and some others, and they bought it and stretched it out to, I believe it was a mile, 9/10 of a mile, and they just lengthened the straightaways and put two new turns in. But the guys there at the historical group went down there and fixed it where you can go around that racetrack, and it's on the historical register of places to visit now, and one of the three tracks, Indianapolis, Bonneville, and, of course, Hillsborough. But that track, the date was taken and given to Talladega. Of course, Bill France built Talladega. But some of the best racing ever was right there, also at Hillsborough. the long straightaways and stand there and watch them come down that long straightaway. And some of those cars back in the 60s, they got to running well over 100 mile an hour down that straightaway. Even modified Fords burning nitro and methanol. They come down that straightaway and almost back them into those corners. And they let off of them, they'd float them in there and then get it sideways and then light them up again. They go to throwing dirt, you know, out across the fence and all. And it just sends chill bumps up and down your arm. Sit there and watch that. And you could watch the people in the grandstand and you could follow their faces and tell exactly where the car's at because everybody's looking at the same thing and their heads would move all the way around that racetrack watching them. And telling you, that was if you've watched sprint car racing or the World of Outlaws, that's a whole lot the way they race back down at Hillsboro. And the good thing about Hillsboro, you know, you can go down there September the 30th and see the cars that used to race down there, and you can see some of the guys like Rex White and Travis Tiller and Brownie King, Paul Lewis, Tiger Tom Pistone, they'll be there. And if you want to, you sit down and talk to them. You can get an autograph. You can have a BS session with them. And they have a banquet now, and they honor some of the old drivers. And this year they're honoring the Allison brothers, Donnie and Bobby. And also they're going to honor Jim Pascal and Bobby Isaac. But it's just a good place to go. What we're talking about, early racing, Key Kafer, Holman Moody Boys, all these guys that we talked about participated at Hillsboro. And another thing that people don't, some do because I've told them, but there's many that don't, Hillsboro was critical in the NASCAR program in 1949, the strictly stock division. He had a good crowd the first race over here at Charlotte, the New Charlotte Speedway, three-quarter mile track on Wilkerson Boulevard. I guess it's June the 19th, 1949, had probably 19,000 people beyond his expectations. He told Taylor Warren to make him a picture of that. He wanted to put it over his headboard in the bedroom. He wanted to look at that the last thing he saw at night. When he got up the next morning, he wanted that to be the first thing he would see. Well, he went to Daytona the second race. And those, down there, you could come through the Palmettos, and so many people could get in free, probably about half of them did. He'd had no way of crowd control. And I guess the time he paid the purse and everything, it didn't look all that good to him. But Hillsboro, and he said it back then, that it's going to make or break him right there. And he put an all-out effort in promotion up here at, in North Carolina, Hillsboro. And the crowd, the people, the fans responded. He had a big, big crowd. I don't know how many it was, 18, 19, maybe 20,000, but it was full. And it tickled him to death, and that convinced him that he could carry on with the Strictly Stock. And then he changed the name to Grand National Nice Cut. But Hillsboro is very significant in automobile racing. It's important. And these guys that look after that track down there, they do a terrific job. And I commend them for what they do, and I hope they're there forever so that the race fans in the future can come down and see what it used to be like. And one day, if we can get Norman and Gerald and some of them off their behindies, they're going to get them a museum. And they got a car that's been given to them, a guy named Carlton Pugh up in Gretna, Virginia, old racer. He had a flathead Ford that he willed it to him. He passed away about a year ago. And he left that car to him, and they're, you know, resurrecting the car. They're going to have it down there to show people what the cars used to look like, the old modified. But it's just a really neat little place to go, and they'll probably have 7,000, 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 people. And it's so large of a place to do that that you got plenty of room. They have vendors and food and everything, and people are very friendly. If you want to know something, find somebody that's got an orange shirt on, and they'll do anything in the world for you. And it's free. They don't charge you a thing. But that's September the 30th of this year.
All right, good. And you got, we'll get ready to close out this segment here, but a couple of last quick things here.
you've got some race car memorabilia that's going to be going into the museum up your way as well from your shop, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, they've already been out and inventoried what they want to take out there. And so probably the week after the 13th, they're going to, you know, come get a bunch of stuff, and we'll help them. And my wife, Sheila's going to help them.
Okay, good deal. And then these people here, this the date again, Bill, for the
September
event. Go ahead.
Down at Hillsborough, September the 30th.
Okay, September 30th, Hillsborough, okay. And that is a Saturday.
64 and 65, carry you right to the track.
Okay. And we'll have all that posted. There's a up-and-coming show here, folks. Before we tell you about that, WMRG 95.3 here on the FM and 95.7 on the Internet FM side here. Our shows are underlined here, folks, by the good folks at Cliff Nelson Motorsports up there out of Broadbrook, Connecticut, and also the Abbey's Helping Hand. I want to send out a very special hello to them here tonight. I know they're on board listening. Cliff, hope you're doing well up there. Dale, hope you're doing good up that way as well. And all the good folks at Abbey's Helping Hand. May 17th, folks, write this date down in your calendar book if you want. May 17th, right here on WMRG 95.3 on the FM and on the Internet, both at the same time here. Bill Blair will be back on the show here, being joined with Danny Crump. We'll be on May 17th here. If a lot of y'all remember Danny, used to be on our Legends of Roundtable show years ago. And Bill and Danny got a little bit of a history there with building engines and things like that. So that'd be a really interesting show and a great show. So tune in for that show. That's May 17th. It's a Wednesday night show, and that'll be at 7:30. So put that date in there. And then May 13th, like I say, folks, we're going to start doing that filming with Bill, myself, and all kinds of legends will be up there. We'll keep you informed of what's going on, some dates and things, because that will be a multi-segment deal. But also, folks, don't forget, preservation of stock car racing, the history of stock car racing. There are several places you can go to. If you've never been, if you're ever down around the Georgia way, you can stop into the Georgia Stock Car Hall of Fame Museum down there. In Dawsonville, they've got some great exhibits down there. Gover Sosby's car down there. They got so many others on display down there. Stop in down there and enjoy that. I believe the Hall of Fame in Darlington is still open as well, isn't it, Bill?
It is.
Okay. Also, the Hall of Fame over there in Mooresville, off in Lakeside Park, that's still open?
It is.
Okay.
Yep.
So Pete,
and they got
free
parking over there, you know, and it doesn't cost an arm and leg to go in there. I think it's $5 or $6, and
yeah,
they got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, down there in Georgia, it's a $5 admission fee at the door. You know, you can see some great stuff. And also, if you've never got a good taste of some moonshine, they actually have a moonshine brewery right up there in the front of the building. When you walk into the Georgia Hall of Fame down there, you can sample the different types of moonshine. They're not a distillery now, so they don't bottle it down there, but you can have try the samples and order if something that you like, and you can have it. They have a distillery company based out of Indiana that does their bottling for them. But it's a really interesting display that they've got down there. David Sosby and all the good folks down there, Gordon Perkle and a bunch of the great folks down there, always down the museum down there. But, Bill, like I say, I appreciate it, man. I really do. I love you, brother, for everything that you're doing, and got a great thing coming up here on the 13th. And, you know, what you're doing, man, is it's after my heart, man. I can't thank you enough for letting me be a part of what you got going on, man. I just can't thank you enough, brother.
Well, we're glad to have you. Appreciate your help and helping us get the word out to people who are interested in early stock car racing. And I believe they really enjoy it. We'll get Todd on the ball and get him to edit that stuff, get it out pretty quick, you know. And And by the way, you know, we've interviewed Waddell Wilson, and Todd's about finished with it, and that's going to be an interesting interview too. So that won't be long. They can sit back and enjoy some of the tales that Waddell had in his days at Holmes and Moody, and later on with the Dream Team and Hendrick Motorsports and all. It's a pretty good story.
Absolutely. Now, that was the other question. Will this the deal that we've got going on with the 13th and on there, is Waddell involved with that or not?
Yes, he is.
Okay, great. Okay, good deal. Well, that's all we're going to say on that right now. We're not going to say a whole lot. Gary, I know you're out there listening. Gary Llewellyn, folks, his dad, Jimmy Llewellyn, and Gary got that other job that he's working, so sometimes it's difficult for him to join us every time. But, Gary, I appreciate you, man, and enjoy them cookbooks, Bill. I'll hope you...
Let me tell you before you go about my buddy Gary. I've been wanting a zero mower and been looking at them, and I said, wouldn't it be great to be able to just try one out? And Gary bought one yesterday.
Oh.
He told me about it, and he brought it out here today, and I spent about 2 hours on that thing.
Are you hooked or what?
Well, I didn't do too bad. I got some lice up down the driveway, and I crushed one of them. I didn't tell Gary about it. He might have saw it when he went out the driveway. But it's, to start with, it's confusing. And I didn't hit but one tree and crushed a light. So, you know, that's not too bad, I guess.
Sheila's going to put you in the penalty box now, you know.
Yeah, my wife, I think, would be all right. I mean, she'd get a little practice. I think she'd look great on it. We're looking for one maybe with a steering wheel on it. These things just got levers.
Yeah, they actually, you know, believe it or not, they do make a zero turn. It's made by Bad Boy. The company is called Bad Boy, and
that's
actually
what Gary's
does.
Got. They don't have a steering wheel. I bet he'll get one because he ain't told me how much stuff he's run over. I had talked to his wife to find out about it. I got a buddy that he got one.
Was that the 62-inch cut or the 52-inch cut?
It's a 54.
Okay, 54. Okay.
I got a buddy that. He bought one, carried it down to the lake down here at High Rock, and he was showing people how fast he could mow and what that thing would do, and they had to go get a record to get it out of the river.
Oh, man, because Bad Boy does make a 64-inch cut machine with a 28-horsepower dual overhead cam motor, and the thing will actually, when I worked at Tractor Supply years ago, and they brought them down there, the thing will do 33 miles an hour. So it'll haul the mail for a grass cutter now.
You can herd a bunch of stuff around here running that fast.
Oh, man,
I'd have to have, if I was around a lake, I'd put pontoons on the side of that thing.
Well, you know, excuse me. Like I say, you can have a lot of fun on them zero turn machines, but, we're looking so forward, man, to putting this thing together and continuing on here, man. And, folks, you just have no idea the preservation of stock car racing, how important it is. If there's anything out there, y'all race fans, just remember, please don't give up on your local racetracks. Support your local racetrack. You know, it's a family entertainment deal. Don't give up on them. You know, there are some racetracks out here that have been running for years, folks. Keep the faith alive. Keep the gates open, because you, the race fans, are the greatest people that have ever walked through a set of gates. And without the race fans, I really don't know where we'd be today, Bill. But, brother, we're going to close out this segment here, and I'm going to get back here to the Country Music Show. And, Bill, I appreciate you, man. From the bottom of my heart, everything that you do, brother, like I say, and we'll keep the spirit of stock car racing alive, and we'll be talking to you here in a few days, and like I say, we're looking forward to rocking and rolling here on the 13th. Brother, you be good, man. Take care, and give our best to the better half. All right, brother, we'll talk to you. Y'all have a great night down there. Well, everybody, WMRG 95.3 here on the FM side. We're going to kick it back here with a little bit more of a country music side here, and we're going to close out the segment of the show. Don't forget, y'all, join us here on May 17th when Bill Blair and Danny Crump will be in here talking about some racing engines and just having a good time, man. We'll just sit back and let them do what they have to do. But let's see here. I think what we'll do is we'll close out a segment here with a little tribute and a little memory here to some of our drivers. But WMRG 95.3, our on the line associates, Cliff Nelson Motorsports up there, and Abby's Helping Hand. Thank y'all for being a part of our WMRG radio network here. Y'all be good, because we're going to be just as bad. Don't go away, everybody. WMRG 95.3 right here with a little dedication, a little tribute to all our drivers. This is the G-Man right here, 95.3 FM in the Carolinas.
I'm racing in the dirt to the asphalt of today. Many greats have graced the track before they went away. Gone but not forgotten, we keep them in our hearts. I'm talking about the drivers in heaven. Remember number 28, carrying on tradition. Davy like a man on a mission, and I know he's looking down every time an engine starts, along with all the drivers in heaven. They're racing a better place where angels always set the pace. And the good Lord says, gentlemen, start your engine. You know up there the track is great, the speedway's behind those pearly gates, and the stairs are always full for the drivers in heaven. Rodney Orr is closing in. They'll replay Allen's famous victory lap in car number 7. I'm talking about those drivers in heaven. The good Lord says, gentlemen, start your engine. Yeah, you know up there the track is great, the speedway's behind those pearly gates, and the stands are always full for the drivers in heaven.
Drivers in heaven, we don't want to forget about them. Well, everybody, it is time to kick up this party just a half dab and put a little bit of fire in a wire, because right now it's time for a little bit of Gretchen Wilson here for the party. This is the G-Man 95.3 on your FM dial. Don't go anywhere, everybody. We'll be back.